Hello, this is Wolfman611 from WolfmansBytes.com, and this is Netcast number 6. First thing I should talk about is the Yeti USB microphone review on WolfmansBytes.com. This is a review I just did this week of a USB-based condenser microphone. Pretty impressive little unit. Actually, it's not too little. It's pretty big. It's about, I don't have the thing sitting here in front of me, but I think it's like 12 inches high, maybe, something like that. It's a pretty hefty looking unit. You got on the front of it, you got, of course, you can go to the website and see the pictures and all that and the text-based review there. But on the front of it, you got your basic volume dial, and you got a mute button. And then when you turn around to its backside, you got the polar pattern selector, which selects how it picks up audio from the various capsules inside it. And then you got a mic gain volume dial back there to actually turn the amplification of the mic, the internal amplification, up or down, which is good if you're in like a conference setting, and of course you want to back that off if you're right up against the mic doing a podcast by yourself and talking into the front capsule. So overall, pretty good mic. The only downside I would say to it is I thought the volume dial in the front and the mic gain dial in the back had a little bit too much play in them. I mean, the mic, when you see the mic, it's a big fancy looking thing. Looks like it should be on the desk of Larry King, doing Larry King Live or something. So when you get this thing and you see it, it's a big fancy looking mic, and then you grab onto the volume dial and the thing almost wiggles because it's so loose. It's just sort of it wrecks what you think of the mic in terms of how high quality it is. That's one thing for sure. On the positive side, they give you almost a 12 foot long USB cable to go with it, which is something that a lot of companies, seems like in the last couple years or so, every time they give you a USB cable thing, it keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller. I bought a USB MP3 player a while back, the Sansa M250, which died on me. And that thing only come with a USB cable that was like 6 inches long. Which, I mean, that's fine if you have a laptop and you're sitting the thing on a desk and you got the MP3 player on the desk too, and, you know, only a couple inches apart. But when you're talking about a big mid-tower system and the desk is up in the air, and it looks retarded having this MP3 player hanging off the front of your computer because you only got a 6-inch long cable. So on the back to the mic, the positive thing there was to give you, it's almost 12 feet long, the cable for the Yeti. Overall, good mic. You got various polar patterns which select, like when you select them, basically defines how the mic is going to pick up audio. It can pick up audio from the capsule in the front. There's a capsule in the back, so let's say you're in a podcast situation where you want the mic in the middle of a table. There's you on one side, a buddy of yours on the other. Each one of you is going to get a capsule inside the mic, and therefore sounds fairly decent. If you're just by yourself and you're going to want to just use it by yourself with the mic in front of you, then you just use the front capsule. If you're in a conference setting where you want to pick up everybody in the room, then it has another setting where basically it turns on all the capsules and it can pick up 360 degrees all the way around the mic. So overall, pretty flexible mic. Not many downsides. Of course, it's USB based. You got to have a computer to use it. And it's about $150. So head on over to the website and give the text review a read. See what you think. It's definitely a good option for a podcast or somebody just getting into that. I got a lot of gear here. For example, doing the podcast now, I'm talking into an M-Audio Luna condenser mic, which requires 48-volt phantom power. And that's being fed into a M-Audio Fast Track Pro. So this whole thing gets recorded at 16-bit, 44.1 kilohertz. And the two things, the mic itself by itself was $300. Of course, that comes with a fairly nice little flight case for it and all that. And then the Fast Track Pro was another $230, something like that, when I bought it. So you're looking at $500. And of course, this is better audio quality than the actual Yeti USB microphone. It's not a lot better. It's a bit better. So it's quite interesting to see how far these USB mics have come. So that's it. Take a look at the Yeti USB mic. Time to move on to other things. One thing I do want to talk about that I mentioned last week was my rant on Epic and their piracy issues they were having, and the fact that their PC sales were suffering, so they decided to move development to the console and basically screw the PC users. But an article I was reading today from it's about Blizzard, who make World of Warcraft and StarCraft and all those games. Apparently they're saying, it says here, Blizzard DRM is a losing battle, is what the Blizzard guys are saying. Frank Pierce, Blizzard co-founder and executive producer on StarCraft II, recently said in an interview that fighting PC game piracy with DRM is a losing battle. The drama that surrounds the restrictive copy protection has been a thorn in gamers' sides for quite some time. I remember doing a review a while back, a couple years ago now, I think it was, I might be wrong about this, but I think it was Far Cry. when I went out and bought that, when I went to install it in the machine, it turned around and started complaining that I had, I think it was either alcohol 150% or clone CD. One of those two programs were installed. I can't remember which one it was now. And basically, the game wouldn't install until that program was removed. Now, that's, you know, who are they to tell me what I should have on my machine for software, you know? Just because some people used alcohol 150% to pirate games or whatever, and therefore, you know, the game company had a major bitch with this thing. Why, you're telling me to get rid of it? I don't pirate games, you know? In fact, I was stupid enough to go and buy your game, and now you're telling me I gotta take software off my machine before I can play your shitty game? That really, that made the hair stand up on the back of my neck. And Far Cry's not a shitty game, just had to get a jab in there. It's interesting to see what's going on here with this DRM stuff. How far they're going to push it. If you look at Ubisoft, they've decided to put a little DRM scheme in place where you have to have the computer always connected to the internet in order to play any of their games. So, and that's whether it's just a multiplayer or a single player too. So if you got a game that has both of those, even the single player, you got to have the computer connected to the internet, otherwise the game don't play. So, and this goes back to the Epic thing. I mean, they're bitching about the fact that PC sales are low, and therefore they're low because everything's getting pirated. Well, no, they're low because you treat your customers like shit. And this whole DRM scheme that these game companies are using is proof of that. I mean, I go out and buy a game, and I'm treated as a criminal because I have alcohol 150% on my machine, therefore I have to uninstall it before I can play the game that I just went out and purchased. No wonder why your sales are bad, you know? And the fact that you're also copying and pasting from the console over to the PC is another issue why your sales are going down as well, on the PC side of things. So, again, go over to the website. It's an interesting article. It's good that Blizzard has the insight, though, to turn around and say that they're not going to bother, you know, loading all their stuff up with massive restrictive DRM, because they know at the end of the day it just pisses the legitimate players off, and it doesn't do anything with the pirates. The pirates that want to play this game, you know, a couple hours, they circumvent the DRM, they release their patches out to the wear sites and stuff, and it's done. So the guys that get the game illegitimately get to play it hassle-free. The guys that go out and buy and actually pay for the game, buy it, get screwed, and got to put up with all this crap. Quite a nice little system the game companies have worked out here. Okay, next up is Red Dead Redemption Review. I went out recently, despite all my hate for the consoles, and purchase this game for the console, Xbox 360 in my case. You can get it for Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3. And this is an interesting game. I was reading before the game came out that Rockstar went through great extremes to make this game possible. When you play the game, you see that. I mean, it's the whole Western theme, they nailed it perfectly. They got, you know, the Western theme, you got the cactuses and all the, you know, the plant life and everything that you'd see in the Wild West. Everything like that they did perfectly. The mountains, the background views, the way the sky looks, all that looks just fantastic. The horses in the game are extremely detailed. They got, like, you can see the muscles in the sides and everything. You can see the way the legs move. The animation used for the horses was all done properly. Overall, they did a really good job on those two aspects of the game. I think with me, though, one of the things about that game that sort of is a bit of a problem is that it's not as active as Grand Theft Auto 4. Like, Grand Theft Auto 4, when you got into that, you had the really big cities, you had the cars, you had the people. You actually felt like you're in a big city with a lot of cars, a lot of people, you know, a lot of buildings and stuff. Certain vistas you could get to and see, you know, like the bridge crossing the river, whatever the case may be. They had a ton of different things you could do. In this game here, because it's back in the Wild West, you don't really see population centers like that, and there's not really a lot of people. So for the most part, when you're running around, you don't really see too much, you know. You might pass the odd person, but again, these people don't really offer much in terms of interaction with that. You just drive by them and away you go. So it's kind of sparse in that regard. Like I said, I give them credit for what they did with the animation on the horses, even the way the horses look. The environment was really well done. The guns are really well done as well, but I'm not too big of a fan of this third-person idea in a game like this. And one of the problems is that in this game here, you get animals. Like, you might run past a pack of wild wolves or wild dogs, whatever they are, and they just don't stand there. They'll actually come after you and try and hunt you down. So they'll get a hold of your horse, and they'll kill the horse, and of course you come off the horse, and now they're after you. And that, for me, seems to be the problem. Trying to actually kill anything that gets right up on you, like right up on your feet, and this third-person view seems to be a bit cumbersome. Also, the horse control, speaking of cumbersome, the way the horse is moving around them sometimes can be a bit of an issue, too. Oftentimes, playing the game, I wish the things had a goddamn reverse because you just wanted to back up, and instead you got to turn all the way around. You know, it's a great big semi-truck. So while the controls are not bad, They could have definitely, I think they could have improved those to be a lot better than what they are. A neat thing about the game, too, is it's got this thing called, I think it's Deadeye or something like that. And when you hit that, it basically puts everything into slow motion, so you can actually take your gun, your pistol, or a rifle, whatever you're using, and plant, or I should say plot, where you're going to have your shots go. So there could be a guy standing in front of you, say he's going to do a duel. He wants to duel you. You could turn around just as he goes to pull his gun out. You can put this Deadeye stuff on, this mode, and then see him as he's pulling his hand slowly out of his, like pulling the gun slowly out of the holster. You see his hand come up. You can actually put a crosshair right on his hand or on his gun and shoot the gun right out of his hand. In which case, in this game here, depending on if you're a good guy or a bad guy, which you decide when you play the game, not killing the guy in the duel can be beneficial in terms of what they give you for money. So yeah, overall, it's definitely a game worth going out and buying just to see what they've done from the point of view of a Western. I give them credit because it's not, you know, another city game. There's all kinds of Grand Theft Auto clones out there and stuff like that, so at least these guys went a different direction, although I'm not really sure from an excitement point of view if that direction was the right one. It's interesting, though, nonetheless, just to see the game. Maybe go out and rent the game if you're not into buying them. So that's Red Dead Redemption for the Xbox 360 review. Next up here is the enhanced desktop security using virtualization. This is another interesting topic. A while back, for years now, I've been reading articles on security, computer security and stuff like that. And one of the things that's been getting to me is that it's no longer, you can't surf the web anymore without being set up for drive-by downloads and different things trying to get installed on your machines, and, you know, just the list goes on and on and on. At one time, years ago, you know, it was, you could turn around and tell somebody, you know, as long as you stay off the malicious type of sites, or the porn sites, or the free software sites that give you commercial software and stuff like that, you could be rest assured that you were going to be safe. But that's no longer the case. Now legitimate websites are starting to get hacked, and their users are going there to actually do legitimate things, banking and things like that. And next thing you know, you're going to this legitimate website that you think is clean, and the thing's sending you some kind of Trojan or a virus or something. So in the process of seeing all this stuff, I figured, you know, just to be sure, just in case, I should try and start checking out this virtualization stuff. There's a program called VirtualBox. There's all kinds of them. I've reviewed VMware a long time ago, stuff like that. So anyway, this time I decided to check out VirtualBox, which is a similar type of product as what VMware is. And I put VirtualBox on the machine there, on this machine here. I installed a version of Linux Mint, and I think another version of Ubuntu, just for the hell of it. And then in those Linux distributions, they have browsers in there, so I went in there, put my bookmarks in there, and now sometimes when I'm surfing, if I think a site is questionable or something like that, and I have to go to it for whatever reason, then I can turn around and just load up the Linux Mint inside a VM, and go and actually check the site out, and not have to worry about, you know, getting contaminated and bringing that back to the actual system. Now, the one thing about that is you got to make sure, if you're going to run virtualization for the safe, you know, just for the sake of being safe while browsing the web and browsing, you know, the different areas of the internet, we'll leave it at that. What you got to make sure is that the VM you're using isn't persistent in terms that it's saving everything that you're doing. Because where you run into a problem with that is that, say, you were saving everything for like a month or two, then one day all of a sudden you decide, you know, you go to a site, you get hit by a drive-by, say, Trojan, something hooks into your keyboard, monitors all your keyboard keystrokes and stuff. If you don't reset that VM, and see, while the VMwares that I've tried, the VMware and also VirtualBox, all have snapshot features. So ideally what you want to do is when you turn around and get the system set up, stay off the internet, get the thing set up to the way you want it, and then turn around and make a snapshot. That snapshot's like a picture of where you have, how you have everything set up. Okay, so each time you go and load the VM up, you want to load it from that snapshot that you know is clean, hasn't been touched by anything. But if you don't do that, and you keep going back to the same VM over and over and over, this is where a keyboard logger can get hooked in there. And then, you know, despite the fact that Trojan, like an actual virus or something like that, wouldn't be able to do anything to your machine, keyboard logger, even under a virtual machine, can still log information like credit card numbers, you know, personal information, social security numbers, things like that, and still send those out across the internet. So if you're going to be doing the virtual machine thing, make sure you're always starting from a clean snapshot when you go out there to actually do your web surfing and stuff. So I did all that. I went through the virtual box. I put the different distributions on there. And my biggest problem with it is that I know it's safer, but on the same hand, it's also slowing things down. Like if you go to a site that's got a lot of flash on there, a lot of flash content, it's really bogs the machine down. These virtual machines just don't seem to be too quick in terms of trying to actually render, you know, a site like GameSpot, for example, that has all kinds of flash material. So that's the one downside to it. I think VMware might be picking that up. I think actually maybe even the latest version of VirtualBox might have made some improvements graphic-wise and things like that, but the version that I have installed isn't really all that fast. So for me, it's sort of, you know, hit and miss. I could use it for some things, but because it's not as fast as actually being on a desktop or actually not being in a VM, I don't bother with it that much. Now, I also have another machine sitting beside me that has Ubuntu on it, and that one there, I can go to those same websites and not really worry about it either, because it's all Linux-based, it's not Windows. So I've got a couple different options, and that's definitely a good way to go. If you're getting concerned about the way it is for Windows right now on the internet, in which it is bad, you know, just because you have McAfee or Norton or Kaspersky or any of that stuff doesn't necessarily mean you're protected either. They're only as good as their definitions are. If something brand new comes out or something mutates and changes its signature, whatever you want to call it, you know, you're open to it, regardless of if you have Norton sitting there or not, or McAfee, any of those other ones. So definitely using a virtual machine to do your web surfing is definitely something to think about. Either that or use like a Linux box or something like that. Linux box is even better because if you use something like Linux Mint or Ubuntu, until they actually start making specific exploits to target the different versions of Ubuntu, and then that's one of the problems they're going to have because there are so many different versions of Linux out there. You know, you got Fedora, you got Ubuntu, you got Mandriva, you got fucking, the list just goes on and on and on. Red Hat Linux, all these different distributions out there, and each one of them is configured differently. They all use different versions of the kernel, which is the basic, you know, the basic heart of Linux. So targeting a Linux system is not like targeting Windows. Windows, for the most part, stays still in a lot of respects, whereas Linux is all over the place. So right now, if you're out there surfing and you're worried about, you know, your machine getting exploited or whatever, you either use a virtual machine or use Linux. That's enough of this topic. I got to get moving on here. But it's interesting anyway to see that these security experts are talking about using virtual machines as a safe way of browsing the web. Some of them will even go as far as having one virtual machine just for your standard web browsing, and then they'll have another virtual machine, which you can do. You can set up as many images or virtual machines as you want. It's all based on how much hard drive space you have. So if you've got a terabyte of hard drive space, you could have, you know, 100 different virtual machines sitting there with all kinds of different operating systems. But what some of these security guys are doing is they'll have one version just for the standard internet browsing, and they'll have another virtual machine set up just for banking, for example. That virtual machine does banking, does not do anything else other than just banking. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't surf the web or anything like that. So that's interesting. Check out that news article. I'll have it on the site. Okay, here's another good article here. Analyst views how to catch a virus. And this is pretty interesting because this guy here, what he does is he works for PC World, I think it is. And he's basically tasked with the goal of trying to determine which antivirus works, you know, best. So he'll turn around and he'll compare Kaspersky to McAfee to Norton, you know, to whoever else is out there, and see which one detects the most amount of viruses. And the interesting thing about this is that this guy talks about how he sets his environment up actually to do this, to actually test these products out and see how they rate against each other. He mentions a few of the tools. One of them is Process Explorer, which I've done a review on wolfmanspites.com. So if you want to learn more about Process Explorer, go check out the review I did. Process Explorer is extremely powerful. It shows you what's going on in terms of what process is running on your machine, you know, what they're doing, are they accessing the internet. You can look at inside their .exe files and see what's contained in there. You can see if they're digitally signed by the people who made them. Microsoft, for example, signs a lot of their stuff digitally signed. So it's pretty interesting to see what this guy's done here. It's a pretty long article too, so you got to actually go through and read it all and see what the guy's done. But it's interesting to see that how he sets up a sandbox and how he goes through and tests all these different products and the like, and see how they compare to each other. Okay, here's another article here. It's called Aircom to Cut Broadband Over Illegal Downloads. And these guys here, what they want to do is they want to have it so that basically they want to give you like a three strikes and you're out type of deal. Where if they detect that you've, what they're doing is they're hiring a secondary firm to come in and actually monitor things like LimeWire and things like that. And if they detect that you've downloaded files, they might even set up a server and allow you to connect to it to download just so they can log all the IP addresses. But once they detect that you've downloaded something, they then get hold of the ISP and get the information behind the IP, and then you get a warning in the mail. You get that warning three times. If you don't stop by the third time, they can cut your internet access right off. This mainly is happening, this is the Irish time, so it's over in the UK. But the same, there's other things going on like that too in the US for sure. I'm not sure about Canada, but it wouldn't surprise me with Canada either. But that's just the way they're going now. They want to have it so that they can basically pull your access to the internet anytime they want. Here's a good story here. It's called New Malware Attack Laughs at Your Antivirus Software. Apparently the malicious software guys have managed to find a way to turn around and make most antiviruses not be able to detect their software. There's some kind of exploit they've found that they can make their code so it's undetectable by all the big names, McAfee, Norton, and things like that. I'm not sure if I didn't see Kaspersky mentioned, but I'm sure they're probably one of them too. So this is nice to know. You go and you spend all this money on these antivirus products, and here's clearly an exploit that renders all of them useless. And I think that's one of the biggest problems I have with the antivirus is that a lot of people, when they get that, you know, when they put that Norton on their machine or that McAfee on their machine, they all of a sudden think they just put on a Kevlar vest and they can go wherever they want on the internet and not be affected by it. And that's not the case, you know. When you use something like an antivirus product, you still got to use common sense. Stay away from the sites that are a little on the wishy-washy side. Stay away from the adult sites, especially the one they're real bad for loading things up on your machine. You know, if you turn around and use common sense along with an antivirus product, and especially don't execute anything in email. If you ever get attachments, delete them. Don't sit there and try to look at them, even if they have your name in there or stuff like that. Oh, you know, your Citibank account or your credit card account needs you to authorize this or that. You got to be aware of all this stuff and just ignore it all and delete it. Trust me, if your bank wants to get a hold of you legitimately, your phone will be ringing or there'll be a letter coming in your mailbox. They won't have to be sending you emails. And that's one of the email thing's always been a big problem because it's too easy to fool most of the people into clicking on links. And then once you click on that link, end up on a website that sends you something. Next thing you know, your machine's screwed. Part of a botnet or something. So it's interesting here, the story here talks about this hole where it can turn around and these new exploits can actually make themselves so they can't be seen by any of these antivirus products. Now, I'm sure the antivirus products will patch this, but depending on how bad this problem is, it could be a cat and mouse thing. These exploit guys might be able to turn around and find another way to do the same thing, and then it's a cat and mouse thing all over again. And that's bad news. The biggest thing with the malware is just use common sense and don't go to the illegitimate sites. But the thing you got to keep in mind now, especially today, is that some of the legitimate sites are being nailed as well. So, you know, you might go over to your proper, real bank account or something like that, and you might find out that your bank, the actual bank website, has been exploited in some way to try and put a keylogger on your machine or steal your credentials or whatever the case may be. This is happening all the time. A lot of legitimate sites are getting nailed, and they're passing viruses and Trojans onto users and stuff. So that's not a good thing either. Okay, so I might as well wrap it up for this podcast or netcast. I'd like to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to this netcast, and I hope to have another one ready to go soon. All the articles in this netcast will have links in the show notes on my website at www.wolfmansbytes.com. Feel free to share this netcast with friends or even upload it to P2P sites. This audio netcast is licensed under Creative Commons 2.5 license for Canada, and more information on the license can be found on the bottom of any page on my website. Once again, thank you for your time. I'll talk to you again soon. Take it easy.